Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment here on 2FM. It is Monday, April 8th, and you are listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh. Coming up between now and 7pm, contrasting fortunes for the Irish provinces in Europe. Keen Tracy will reflect on all of the Champions and Challenge Cup action over the weekend. The Premier League title race continues to entertain. Alan Collier standing by to chat Association Football. We'll also be looking ahead at the small matter of Ireland versus England at the Aviva tomorrow night.
Yeah, let's hope it stops raining before that one, which I'm looking forward to. But also with us tonight, Peter McCannavan has his say on the opening weekend of the Football Championship action, and Niall Moran is standing by to review Clare's league final triumph over Kilkenny. As always, if you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Ruby, before we get into the show, let us just dive straight into our competition, because this week we have got a great Aer Lingus competition for you, the listener. As the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team, Aer Lingus brings home advantage to every Ireland game, no matter where we are playing.
And thanks to Aer Lingus, you could win a fantastic trip to London to support the Ireland women's rugby team against England in the Guinness Six Nations. That's our overall prize to be won on Friday. But thanks to Aer Lingus, we've also got signed Irish rugby jerseys to give away.
Yes, indeed we do. So for the chance to win a signed jersey and get into Friday's draw, just answer the following question. True or false, Twickenham is the official home of England rugby? Text your answer, name and email address to 51552, and later on we'll pick one person randomly and their name will go into the draw on Friday. And just one important thing on our big prize: you have to be able to travel on Friday the 19th of April, so do not be entering if you can't get the day off work, off school, off college. As always, RT competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details. Ruby, we are joined by Alan Colley and Keane Tracy, who I suspect might know the answer to our question. But Keane, no hints, no giving away, no giving it away.
There's a small chance Colley mightn't.
There's a good chance Colley mightn't.
51552, Alan, true or false, Twickenham is the official home of England rugby. So we'll leave that one with you.
Usual terms and conditions apply, Shane. So Alan, save yourself the 40.
Yeah, this is true.
Thanks, lad.
Listen, we've lots to get through on this evening's show. We will be chatting football first up before diving into the rugby in detail. However, gentlemen, I do have to ask, as it is Monday, sporting highlights of the weekend. Keane Tracy, starting with yourself, what caught your eye?
It was a really good weekend of rugby, I think. All around good quality on show. I was at the Aviva on Saturday evening. Wasn't the best game. I know we'll obviously get stuck into it in a bit, but I suppose my highlight was watching Jameson Gibson-Park score a hat-trick, a 17-minute hat-trick in the first half in the flesh. A guy, look, who's been a key player for Ireland and Leinster for a long time, but just seems to be growing in importance. And he was absolutely immense. One of those guys who I think you get a greater appreciation when you're in a stadium and you watch his vision and his execution and how the players just feed off him. And yeah, I think he's going to be a vital player again this weekend for the quarter final against La Rochelle.
I think he will be too. Alan Colley, yours?
Normally, I suppose, when we do have the chat on Monday and we pick out our highlight, it's always the majority of the time based around an individual performance, maybe, or something special from a horse or something like that. But I'm going to give it to a team performance this weekend. And there's a lot of people, obviously, that we're going to get into the title race and the three teams. And I've said many times the last few weeks how I think it's absolutely fantastic and the best title race that I can remember anyway. But I don't hear many people mention an Arsenal as being really strong contenders. Obviously they're in the race and I think they're the favourites. I think they're absolutely phenomenal, and the performance that they put in on Saturday evening away to Brighton, difficult game, Brighton good team. I know they're probably not having the best season in the world in terms of where they were probably last year, but still a difficult game away from home, pressure on, and it could have been 5 or 6. Just the whole collective performance in terms of the units and how they played, and the structure and the shape of the team, I thought they were absolutely brilliant, Arsenal, coming off the back of obviously that good performance against Man City last week. And they're just quietly going about their business. As I say, all the focus on Liverpool, Man City, and they seem to be third in line, if you like, despite the fact that they're the ones, I think, who are on top now and on goal difference, and I think are the favourites out of the three. And I just thought Saturday it was almost a statement performance from them to suggest for anyone who's doubting them that we are here for the long haul. And I know there's always been this narrative around Arsenal in recent years about them having a soft underbelly and they might let you down and they'll crumble at the biggest moment. This team won't crumble 100%. They'll be there, and as I say, I think they're going to win the league.
Well, I took inspiration from you on the two Johnnies about 20 minutes ago, and they asked me who's going to win the league, and I said Arsenal, and I said, you know, my mind just went to Alan Colley calling it so long ago. That's how,
and I'm not
how
just
high
saying
I hold you in.
I'm not just saying that because I tipped him at the start. I just fancied last year's experience. I was so impressed with Arteta since he's come in. He went after a couple of the heavy hitters in the dressing room who were dragging the place down. I was always impressed with that. He came across so well in that documentary, and I just think the team that he's built, the signing of Rice, learning from last year, they're a brilliant, brilliant team.
Absolutely. Ruby, your sporting highlight?
Strange one. I'm going to give it to Seamus Heffernan. So long associated with Ballydoyle, second jockey there for many years. That association came to an end. Seamus not getting any younger, but we were in Leopardstown yesterday for the trials, I suppose, for the Guineas and the Derby. Seamus won the first for Edward O'Grady, and then he won the Bally Sacks on a 50-1 shot for Adrian Murray. And just to watch someone, you'd have to say, in the twilight of their career, go from such a big role into being a freelance jockey in Ireland, which is a difficult thing to do, and still be landing the big prizes. You got to tip your cap to longevity, if nothing else.
No, absolutely, absolutely. For all it's worth, I was going to pick Leona Maguire, but she was just pipped by Nelly Korda in the match play final, so I think I'd have to say Armagh, a first ever Division 1 league final in the ladies football. They defeated Kerry. And Nadine's been on Wednesday for so many weeks now, and we've been chatting about Amy Mackin and other stars as well, but to get to their maiden final and to win against a very very decent Kerry side as well, I think was very good. So no doubt Nadine will be on Wednesday to chat more about that with Marie. However, Keane, you are going to enjoy a cup of tea for a few minutes, and we're going to chat rugby shortly. But Alan Colley, you are here with us for football. We will be previewing Ireland England in due course and getting into the Premier League title race, which you started off the conversation there. But before we do, just a word on the big news today. Stephen O'Donnell has left Dundalk as manager. Probably expected. This was, we suspected this might happen sooner rather than later, and it's an unfortunate end for a man who clearly cares so much about the club.
Yeah, it is. It's sad to see any time anyone lose their job, but I know Stevie personally, and it'll be bitterly disappointing for him because, as you say, he has such a close affinity with Dundalk, and he was obviously a brilliant player throughout all those successful years with them. And it was almost a case of when he went back to Dundalk, was he, obviously he was hoping that he could replicate that success as a manager as well, and it started quite well for him in that first year. They got into Europe, finished third, and you're thinking there's something to build on here now, but the last obviously 18 months hasn't quite gone to plan, and there's been trouble off the pitch as well, Shane, in terms of, I suppose, the shape and structure of the club. I spoke to Stevie before the Shamrock Rovers game, the start of the season, and he was explaining just in terms of even the problems they were having with recruitment and how late the ownership actually was confirmed, which meant he missed out completely on the Irish market before he was able to obviously know what his budget was and see how much he could spend or and who he could bring in. And that obviously left a huge dent in terms of his plans and preparations for this year. So once that was confirmed, the ownership, he had to dip into the UK, and obviously that's why you see so many loanees. And it's always a gamble when you're bringing in lads from obviously England, Scotland, Wales, wherever the case may be, that don't know the league. It's difficult to predict really will things go as well as you plan, and you're almost banking and hoping that with a bit of luck that they might hit the ground running, because it's a difficult league to come into for anyone. I always feel as though you do need, I suppose, the nucleus of your team or squad to be Irish lads and have the one or two filtered in around that, whatever the case may be. But it was the opposite this season for those problems. As you say, it hasn't gone off to a great start at all. I thought they might persist with him for another while, but I don't think Stevie's the only problem at Dundalk. There's structural problems as well in terms of the ownership and as I say, above Stevie, and it's sad to see really, because for the last probably throughout Stephen Kenny's success, we lauded Dundalk and rightly so for everything that they achieved. They were absolutely phenomenal standard bearers in this league and in Europe as well, hence Stephen going on to getting the international job. But it's just sad to see that they've never built on that, Shane, and it looks like it's a bit of a mess up there now. And in terms of the infrastructure around the club as well, they never capitalised on any of the success that they had in terms of the financial windfall off the back of Europe as well. And the ground, I've said it before, is a disgrace, Oriel Park. It's absolutely horrendous, the worst ground in the country. And it's sad to see where they're at, Dundalk, because they're such a big club, and obviously Stevie losing his job, it's not nice to see either.
Just briefly before we do get on to the Premier League, safe pair of hands are hard to come by in the League of Ireland at the moment. Who might be the right man to steady the ship at Dundalk?
Yeah, there'll be plenty of people applying for the job, I'm sure, because lots of managers who are desperate to get an opportunity or to get back in if they're out of work, so they'll have no problems there. But it's picking the right man, as it always is, Shane, and who is the right man, we won't know. I haven't even seen in terms of, is there anyone linked to the job at the moment? It's so soon after Stephen only losing the job earlier, and it's disappointing, because I know Stevie really cares, he's a young up and coming manager. Sometimes this can kind of, it can be a good learning experience from him as well. He's still only young, he can regroup. I always felt as well, though, and it should be mentioned, he had a really good solid job at St. Pat's and they won the FA Cup, and obviously only Stevie could tell you in terms of his personal decision to go back to Dundalk. And I outlined the fact that he had a huge history up there as well, and I'd say that played a big part in his decision to go back to Dundalk. But I, looking back now, and I'm sure he might not admit it now, but it was a strange move to leave St. Pat's, coming off the back of winning the FAI Cup as well, and then to uproot and go back to Dundalk, who weren't in the best of situations, if you like, at the time. So that's something he'll only be able to say himself, but for me, I thought that was a strange decision.
Well, looking backwards doesn't solve anything. You have to look forward. So looking forward, what sort of a coaching session is Jurgen Klopp having this week? Tiger practice?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, Ruby, really, when you think of, I suppose, in the close proximity of the FA Cup match only a couple of weeks ago on Paddy's Day, and then the game yesterday, and almost the two of them played out to the same pattern, yet Jurgen Klopp might look back at the end of the season and think that average Man United team cost us the FA Cup and could have cost us the Premier League as well. It's just incredible, really, I suppose. They were hanging on for dear life, United, in the first half. And you have to give credit for that they hung on, and they did, and they stayed in the fight. How, I don't know. But while it only stayed 1-0, they were always in that fight. Then, obviously, a silly mistake from Kwanzaa. And it was almost the case of, I was looking at it again today in the mistake, and that kind of mistake only happens when things are going so well for you and so easy. It's such a lazy pass that you almost get into a bit of a comfort zone and you just switch off for a second because you're having it so easy. And he plays that square pass. Now, to be fair to Fernandes, it's a hell of a finish. You have to give him credit for that. It was a brilliant finish. And then all of a sudden the crowd are up and they get a bit of a lift, and you're thinking United now have something to obviously fight for and go out and try and maybe get a result. It played out much the same then after that. They obviously got the second goal with Maino, and it was a brilliant, brilliant finish. And I suppose if you are looking for shining lights in what's been a dreadful season for Man United, he's been the brightest shining light. He's been absolutely brilliant, that kid. And he's won, obviously, the camera pans to Jim Ratcliffe non-stop in the stand, and everybody speculating about the future and what it might look like for Man United. He's certainly one that you could build a team around, Maino. He's a fantastic young player. But then obviously Liverpool are back chasing the game, and the pattern, the same thing as what we were seeing for the first half and the first 60 minutes, to take over the game, get the equaliser. But they'll be so disappointed that they didn't come away with 3 points, because as I said, they slipped up in the FA Cup match. They were totally dominant that day, and again yesterday. If that's the result that cost them the league, they'll be absolutely furious.
I know Liverpool are a club that often play off emotion, and that's what drives them on, and they want to send Jurgen Klopp off on a positive note, but were they over emotional? Was it time for cool heads, and that's what was lacking for them, particularly near the end of the match?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Shane, but I suppose the flip side of that is it's hard to be critical of them for being like that, because that's what they've built all their success on.
Yeah.
And like, I'm looking at it yesterday and I'm thinking, this is chaos. Like, I spoke about Arsenal, and we'll come to Arsenal, but the big thing with Arsenal on Saturday, and the big thing with them over the last few weeks, and even going away to Man City, they are so assured and calm, and because of the structure that they have, it's never chaotic. They're in control of the games that they're playing, and obviously they have Jorginho, who's very good at that, Rice, but the game always looks as though it's being played at their tempo, and they'll speed it up when they want and they'll slow it down when they want. Liverpool at times it's like a basketball match. Now, we laud it for, I suppose, the electricity that they bring to a game of football, and Klopp is great for that. And we've often spoken about the rock and roll style of football and helter skelter 100 mile an hour, and it's brilliant to watch. But in games like that, when you're going for a league and you're so dominant, obviously, as Ruby said, the chances to miss, you have to kill off the game when you're in so much control. But I also think you have to bring a sense of control to a game as well, and you dictate on your terms rather than, as I say, being up and down chance after chance, gifting chances, and thinking, well, they might score two or three, but we'll definitely score four or five. It can't always be like that. And if you think back, Shane, as well, even the last few weeks, they fell a goal behind now in how many games as well this season. It's been a trait. Now, they're brilliant at coming back, and they're relentless, and they won't let up in how they go about it. But I always feel that that's going to catch up on you at some point, and that's why I think Arsenal have the big advantage. Defensively, they have the best record in the league. They've only conceded 24 goals, but there's always a sense of control about what they're doing throughout the team. And as I said, they have players that can speed it up when they're on the attack, but they're quite happy sitting in as well, soaking up pressure and then hitting teams on the counter-attack.
What is the difference this year to last year then, Alan, with Arsenal? Like, they were bombing to this point last year, then the wheels fell off the bike. How have they managed to keep their composure and stay in control? Because at Brighton at the weekend, they were by far the better team.
Yeah, I think a couple of things in that, Ruby, and you'll know as a sports person, and I mentioned even Stephen O'Donnell, sometimes a setback can teach you so much, and it's almost, you often hear the phrase, you need to lose one to win one. And to be fair to Arsenal last year, I felt, whilst they deserved huge amount of credit, it was still their first year. There was not many players in that team that they had last year going for a league title with any kind of title winning experience. And even Arteta was very young himself in terms of what he was trying to achieve as a manager, and it was his first probably tilt at trying to win a league title. I think they've learned so much from last year, and he's tweaked the team. Obviously, the addition of Rice has been an unbelievable signing. The goalkeeper, I was questioning that at the start of the season as well. That was the only area I've questioned. I never thought at the start it was a good idea that you're going to him coming out saying, well, there's no number one. You have to have a number one as a goalkeeper, and you have to pin him down and let the other lad, whoever's the number two, fight it out with him. But you can't be saying, I don't have a number one, it's between the two of them. Now, as the season has gone on, I always felt that was just kind of him, that was media talk from him, because he has nailed Rea down and he wanted him as his number one. Now, there was a few issues with him at the start, but he's certainly settled down, and I think he's been very good as well. Mentioned the defensive qualities. Saliba was a massive player last year, Ruby, as well. Probably, along with Van Dijk, I think he's the best centre half in the league, and he missed the whole running last year, and that was a massive loss for him. He's back. He has the relationship with Gabriel at the back. Ben White, who not many people mention as well, going through his own struggles at the moment in terms of the international stuff, turning down England, and when you think of the rifles that they have, and he's probably the best in the league at the moment, and he's not turning out for England as well. He's been absolutely magnificent. I think Jorginho brings huge amount of experience to that midfield area of the three. It's able to push Rice on into a more advanced role, and they've a brilliant team going, him and Odegaard, and then you have the star quality of Saka. And to be fair with Havertz as well, he brought Havertz in, Ruby. A lot of people questioning him, his form, but Arteta has stuck with him and he's reaping the rewards for it now, and there's a player in Havertz, and we're seeing that now at the moment. So I just think he's done a phenomenal job, and as I said, he's learned so much from last year, and that's why they're in the position that they're in now, and I think they're favourites for it now.
Well, we'll see how Europe affects them. They host Bayern Munich tomorrow. Manchester City, of course, 4-2 winners over Crystal Palace are away to Real Madrid, and we will continue our Premier League chat as the Premier League title race heats up. However, Ireland-England is tomorrow. We can hear from Ireland captain Katie McCabe now and get Alan's thoughts on what might unfold tomorrow.
No, I've not spoken to any of the English girls. But, no, look, for us, of course, like my Arsenal teammates, they pose a lot of threats. They're world-class players, but so is the rest of the squad. They're not European champions for no reason. They've got quality all over their squad, and obviously we'll be looking to nullify that on Tuesday, tomorrow night. But yeah, there's, as I said, there's not just the Arsenal girls to look out for. They've got a range of quality in players, and yeah, we'll make sure to obviously be keeping their strengths at bay. We're realistic. We know what we were up against France. But in terms of our belief, we always believe we can go and beat anyone on our day. We've got the quality. We've got a world-class goalkeeper. How we set up, the art of defending at times. We've showed our quality and how we can attack in obviously previous games throughout the Nations League. So it's about finding the balance. And for us against these big teams, these big nations, there is only maybe a couple of key moments at this level as well. So we just need to make sure we're on it tomorrow and decisive in those moments.
Two questions for you, Alan. What does Eileen Gleeson take from Friday night's game, and what does she implement tomorrow night at the Aviva?
I think the big positive she has to take from Friday night's game is that it was only 1-0, and the longer the game went on, Ruby, there was that hope that obviously we might salvage something from it in terms of chasing them down with, now it was agricultural stuff, with long throws into the box and the push to centre half Louise Quinn up front as well, but that can cause problems. And again, going back to even Liverpool United, while it's only 1-0, you're always in the fight. So I think she can take heart and positivity from that, that the girls, despite conceding the early goal, they regrouped and as I said, they got themselves back into the match. They were kind of weathered a big storm for that large parts of that first half, but they kept it at 1-0, and then they had their own couple of, I suppose, little skirmishes around the edge of the box and the 6-yard box themselves. So I think it'll be something similar tomorrow. It'll be a defensive setup, and it has to be against these teams. I made the point here with Shane on Friday night that we were hearing all about when Eileen was taking over, from the players as well, it wasn't just Eileen, that we're going to play this new brand of expansive football and we're going to go toe to toe with teams. Well, they're not, because they're not good enough to go toe to toe with these top teams yet, so they have to play similar to what Vera Powell always did, and she was very pragmatic in her approach, and I think Eileen needs to be the same, and that's the right thing to do. And I think we've seen that Friday night, even with the five at the back for large spells, and I think it'll be something similar tomorrow. You're playing against one of the best in the world in England, unbelievable players, unbelievable quality, and as I said, if it can be something similar, that they can hang in the game and it can only be 1-0 with maybe an hour 70 minutes, and then they can obviously take their chances and have a bit of a go with 20 minutes to go, I think she'd take that right now.
Well, here's hoping for a positive result tomorrow. We are on air from 6 o'clock tomorrow. We're with you all the way until 10 o'clock on 2FM as we bring you live coverage of Ireland versus England from the Aviva Stadium. For now, Alan Colley, thank you very much for popping in the studio.
Thanks,
we're taking a short break, and then we're chatting rugby with Keane Tracy, and we'll hear from Leinster senior coach Jack Nienaber.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now, Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent is with us to chat rugby. Before we speak to Keane, though, we can hear from Leinster senior coach Jack Nienaber, who was speaking to our own Michael Corcoran.
It was a knockout game, and the reason was to get into the quarterfinal and where we are now. So I think that's where we wanted to be as a squad, is to participate this weekend. It didn't matter if it was the Stormers or La Rochelle, but just to be part of this week.
And the good thing about it is that I've never seen a perfect game of rugby, so that means that you've a fair degree of room for improvement this week, and it'll have to be that way because this is another step up this weekend.
Yeah, no, I think everybody's always striving for a perfect game, but for us this weekend, it's, listen, we need to get a result. If it's by 1 point, if it's ugly, if it's messy, it doesn't matter. I think the main thing for us is to work hard to get a result, and I think, yeah, that's our aim. Obviously, it would be perfect if we can do it in such a manner that there's some entertainment. But my experience of knockout games is there's a lot to play for. There's a lot of pressure, and these games are normally tight. So I expect it to be nothing other than that in a knockout game.
And can I talk to you about those knockout games in your previous employment with South Africa? Because it led to two successive, you know, winning the World Cup twice. We saw the pool matches mattered in terms of getting you to the knockout stages. But what made the difference when it comes to knockout rugby, or to finals footy, as they call it down in Australia or New Zealand?
No, I think that just to get a result. So obviously, I think it's getting the players aligned with a plan. I think from a coaching group and from a, can I call them, a game leaders group, it's to formulate a plan that you think will give you a result on the weekend, and then to get the squad aligned in terms of that. And then it's on Saturday, it will be all about accuracy and handling the pressure and just banking on all the work that you've done. I mean, finals rugby. You need to be accurate, you need to have intent, you need to be physical, and then you need to get a little bit of luck at the end, that will be nothing less for us than this weekend.
I'm sure when you were engaged by Leinster, you have at some stage looked back at those matches against La Rochelle, those final games. I mean, is there something from those that you've learned in terms of the kind of the rivalry, or something that can help you get across the line this week?
Yes, to be honest, I analysed the games, obviously knowing that we will play Ireland and we will play La Rochelle, not La Rochelle, but we will play France, you know. So obviously I analysed those games last year, just to have a little bit of idea How the clubs were doing, and obviously there's a big influence of Leinster players in Ireland, so probably had that add on when I looked at the game. So, but in terms of the rivalry between the two clubs, I mean, I'm new to that. I've only been involved in one of the games, and watching a game almost as a fan, as an analyst through a TV, you don't actually get the, you don't feel it like we are feeling it now currently walking in the corridors. You can feel the excitement. You can feel how electric this week is. And it should be like that. But I don't think you get the sense when you look at it from the outside. But obviously looked at the games in, from an analytical point of view.
And it's so important that you transfer that feeling within the group right now and the excitement level there is right now into a performance over 80 or maybe even more minutes this coming weekend.
Yeah, it might go. I mean, it might go to extra time. So, yes, that's the key thing for us, is to almost, yeah, back on all the hard work. I mean, there's nothing that you probably can do in this week. You can't make the players fitter. You can't make them handle better. You can't make them run harder. You can't make them faster. The key thing is to get alignment in your plan. Get alignment in what they you think they're going to bring, and how are we going to stop that? And then you must just, like I say, you must bank on all the hard work that you've done since we started with the preseason, which I haven't been part of, and all the hard work that we've done since I joined in the beginning of December and trying to embed a defence system. You just have to bank on the learnings and the effort and the work that you've put in since then, because like I say, nothing you do in this week will probably have an influence in the game. It's what you've done in the last 5 months that will probably have an influence in the game.
And just before we finish up, a word about your impressions of the number of people who are coming to support Leinster. I mean, over 40,000 people last week, and the tickets have just gone on sale at 2 o'clock this Monday afternoon, and they're approaching 40,000 already. It's looking like it's going to be a sellout. That number of people coming to support a team like that in a competition like the Investec Champions Cup?
No, I said it even when we went into this quarter, this round of 16 game. I told the players that, listen, there's always pressure in knockout games, and the pressure comes from probably from us more, first of all, from the players, from the coaches. I mean, we all feel the pressure because we so desperately want the result, you know, and you feel the pressure because you care. You care as an individual. You want to succeed. And then the pressure, the good pressure, is the pressure that you feel from the fans, and that's the expectancy, the expectancy pressure, if I can put it like that, if there is a name like that or a word like that. But that's also that's not a burden. It's actually a privilege to have a fan base like Leinster, you know, where you do have 40,000 people that come and support you. There might be more this week, but I mean, it's a privilege to be part of a club where people are so supportive, and we should see that as that. I don't think we should see it as pressure. We should see it as a privilege.
Keane, I'm sure there's every chance there could be a full house this weekend for the Leinster La Rochelle game, but you were in the Aviva last weekend, and what are the biggest points that Jack Nyambar has to work on?
Well, I think last weekend, Ruby, there was a touch of complacency. I think it was obviously a massive knockout game, but with Leicester coming over without three of their most important players in Ollie Chessam and George Martin, who both play for England, who were central to England beating Ireland in Twickenham a few weeks ago, and Tommy Rafael in the back row, I think they almost threw in the towel a little bit, but they caused Leinster plenty of problems. And I think their Leinster's slow start probably summed up that touch of complacency, which I should add, Leo Cullen alluded to after the match. But I think because they'd been sitting around all day, they watched the La Rochelle game against the Stormers, which was obviously a dramatic late win for them. I think they probably had one eye. They're never going to admit it publicly, of course, but I think they probably had one eye on what's coming this weekend, because it was going to take a massive upset for Leicester to beat Leinster in Dublin. And while they gave it a good rattle, Leinster were pretty much in control as once they stepped it up after conceding that early try. So there's going to be no fear of that this weekend, that's for sure and certain. But I think there's still a few bits in the Leinster game in general, Ruby, that like, wouldn't fill me with enormous confidence that they're certainly going to win this weekend by any means. I was having a look at it there earlier, and the odds are in Leinster's favour, but I actually think La Rochelle, even allowing for Leinster's home advantage, are probably going to be slight favourites. I think Leinster's attack is still sort of a little bit stodgy, I would say. I think that I've touched on it earlier at the top of our chat when I mentioned how good Jameson Gibson-Park played in terms of being my moment of the weekend, but I think they're becoming even more reliant on Jameson Gibson-Park to provide that spark from halfback. I think Ross Byrne is still trying to find his way a little bit after injury, and obviously Nian Arbour's defensive system is still very new. Even though they've Leinster players have had plenty of time to work with it, you have to remember that they were away for the Six Nations period. They've come back now. They conceded 3 tries to Leicester at the weekend. The previous week their defence was excellent against the Bulls. To keep them scoreless in the second half was very good, but the challenge that they're going to face this weekend is just so different to what Leicester posed this weekend. So I think there's a few things in that, Ruby. I think James Ryan is an enormous loss, and I think we saw that again at the weekend. He's a guy who, for some reason, I think a lot of people don't rate as highly as they should, but I think we saw how much he was missed last weekend against Leicester. And if you think back to when James Ryan was forced off in last season's Champions Cup final, that was a massive point to turn in the game in La Rochelle's favour. So in terms of around the set piece, running the line out, the aggression he brings, he was outstanding earlier this season when Leinster beat La Rochelle in the pool stages. So they've got plenty of work to do this week, make no mistake about it.
I know we're reviewing the weekend, but it is newsworthy. La Rochelle are already in Ireland. Ronan O'Gara has brought them down to Cork.
Yeah, what a story. Like I mentioned, La Rochelle were playing in Cape Town over the weekend. So I believe they flew back to France via Paris and then came to Cork today, which is unheard of really for a club side to do this. So like, what they've done is they've taken the travel out, that they just got it over and done with in one go, rather than having to make obviously a shorter trip over to Ireland. I believe they're going to be based down in Fota Island, so they're going to be off the beaten track a little bit. They're away from the glare of the French media. Of course, they're in the hometown of Ronan O'Gara, which is just adds a nice little subplot, I think, to the whole thing. It, like I said, La Rochelle are lucky in that the vast resources in terms of the finances that they have, they can actually afford to do this, because not a lot of teams will be able to put a team up for a week. Like, you might see it in international teams, but yeah, nice little subplot. Rog coming back, I saw he tweeted a picture of from a rainy runway in Cork.
Did you see Ulton Delance?
Yeah, Ulton Delance.
They were playing the Fields Baton Rouge.
Yeah, so I mean, like, you look through that La Rochelle team, and this is something I'm writing about in tomorrow's paper. Like, there's a strong Munster influence coursing through their veins. I mean, from Ronan O'Gara, Dunica Ryan, Sean Dougal is the contact skills coach. He used to play for Munster. And obviously, I know Ulton Delance is a Connacht stalwart, but he grew up in Tralee. So it's perhaps no surprise that Rog is trying to buy into the Munsterness even more this week. And yeah, it's going to be absolutely fascinating to see if it works for him.
He's buying into the Munsterness, but what are Munster going to have to do to buy themselves a bit more success?
Yeah, it was a sobering afternoon in Franklin's Gardens yesterday, I would say, Ruby. The first half was an amazing game to watch, actually. And Munster gave as good as they got. Look, they were seriously hampered before they went into the game by just such a significant injury list, which has been the story of their season. And then they had Orgie Snyman, who, look, just can't catch a break at all, pulling out last minute, and Shane Daly similar as well. They were two big losses. And then there was talk that there was a virus running through the camp, which is why Orgie Snyman missed out on the game. You had Craig Casey puking on the pitch. You had Tadhg Byrne almost coughing up a lung afterwards in the match. So look, I was happy to see that Graham Rowntree didn't look to use that as an excuse in his post-match interview, but there's no doubt it played a part. But you look at the concession of 4 tries that they had. Dennis Leamy will be really annoyed when they reflect on that. They were just cut open far, far too easily, even allowing for the injuries and the virus that ran through the squad. They were just too passive, and they were very narrow in defence. Like, Northampton deserve huge credit. They've one of the best attacks in Europe, you'd have to say, at the moment. They're top of the Premiership for a reason, but it was just too easy for them to beat Munster. So I think it was probably a bit of a reality check, Ruby, for Munster. Look, they did unbelievably well to win the URC last season, but they are considerably off, I would say, winning a Champions Cup. For the second season in a row, they've been knocked out at the round of 16. They've only won one game in the Champions Cup this season, and that was an amazing victory away to Toulon, but they lost twice to Northampton. They drew at home to a second string, if not third string, Bayonne side, and they threw away a big lead away in Exeter. So, I mean, when you look in the form, it's hardly a surprise, really, what happened, even though I still think they'll reflect on that game and think that they were well in it and they could have been closer in the end.
So we've only one Irish province left in the Champions Cup. However, we've two provinces in the Challenge Cup. Connacht had a strong late finish against Po, and Ulster were disciplined, unlike their opponents, to prevail. You and I were chatting before we came on air about only one Irish province ever winning the Challenge Cup, Leinster, in 2013, when it was the Amlin Cup. So how much, if they did go all the way, would it mean to Connacht and Ulster in their prospective journeys and where they are this season?
It would be massive. I mean, they're probably separate, really. I mean, Connacht, being honest, are certainly a way off winning a Champions Cup. I think Ulster, probably a couple of seasons ago, would have fancied them as being contenders for the Champions Cup. But you look at the mess that's been going on and off the pitch. It's great to see Richie Murphy has brought a bit of stability, it seems. They're just off the back of the 2-week trip to South Africa, and that was a big win for Ulster in more ways than one, actually, by beating Montpellier. Paul Willems, actually, is worth mentioning, who got sent off against Ireland for a high shot, was sent off again for Montpellier against Ulster. So talk about a guy not learning your lesson. You just need to see that stuff stamped out. But you're right, Shane. Like, Connacht and Ulster, like, you can't turn your nose up at an opportunity to win a trophy, no matter what it is. You look at the lift that Munster got from winning the URC last season. So it was interesting to see that both teams were so strong, because the previous week there was a lot of eyebrows raised from a Connacht perspective that Finlay Beelam and Bundy Aki weren't playing in the URC, and you would have kind of thought maybe Connacht would throw all their eggs into the URC basket to, number one, to make sure they get back into the Champions Cup next season, but number two, to make sure that they get into the playoffs. Now, obviously, there's a big prize at stake, because as well as winning the trophy that is the Challenge Cup, you will also get into the Champions Cup that way if you don't do it domestically. So there was no doubt that Bundy Aki and Finlay Beelam made a big difference, in particular coming back into the team. Bundy Aki got man of the match. So it looks like the Connacht and Ulster are going to go all out to try and win the Challenge Cup, and I think that's the right thing to do.
It'll be very interesting indeed to see what happens there. Keane Tracy, thanks for taking our call. It'll be a great weekend of rugby, the one ahead. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Peter Canavan to look at the Football Championship.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Welcome back to Game On. So the Football Championship kicked off last weekend with games in all four provinces, but I think it was the one in Ulster that was the highlight, when Monaghan faced Cavan, and Peter Canavan joins us on the line. Peter, the Football Championship, especially in Ulster, is always something to look forward to. Did the game live up to your expectations?
The game itself probably did, Ruby. To be honest, it was slow to get going, but slowly but surely, you felt yourself getting really involved in it, and that was maybe more due to Calvin's enthusiasm and the zest in which they went about their business. disappointing from a Monaghan perspective, in that they didn't click into the gears that you would expect of them. Yes, they did come back, they did have a response, but they played nowhere near their best football. From a Calvin perspective, and when you look at the game and go through the stats, probably, you know, both teams had very similar stats, with one exception, and that was turnovers. And in the course of the game, I think Calvin had 21 turnovers compared to 11. So if you're looking for a measurement, a yardstick in terms of hunger and boys putting their bodies in the line, you would look at that stat, and that tells its own story. They were more up for it, and they weren't leaving Clonus as losers yesterday.
To a layman like me, Peter, the biggest stat that sticks out is the 3 goals Cavan got and only the 1 that Monaghan got.
Yeah, fair enough. And I suppose that's a trait that Monaghan, unfortunately for them, it's a trait that was very obvious throughout the National League. Prior to yesterday's game, I think of all divisions, maybe they conceded a serious amount, conceded 14 goals. And you would have thought, with Rory Began back from America, that, you know, he was going to solve that problem. But he didn't. He pulled off a great save in the first half. It could have been more than 3 goals. And similar to many of the league games that Monaghan played, it was their downfall once again, their inability to defend at the back and to prevent the goals coming.
The Rory Begg and Gamble backfire in a way. I know he pulled off a couple of good saves. He got a good score as well. But near the end, he just looked blown. Even the late goal for Cavan as well.
No, I wouldn't say it backfired, Shane, because he was in contention for man of the match. And if Monaghan, you know, with 5 minutes to go, when Monaghan was leading, he was probably Monaghan's best player. His kickouts were very accurate. He came up the field. He was involved in setting up scores from play. He kicked a great point near the end himself. And I suppose the reason he was caught out was because Monaghan were chasing the game. He found that the team needed goals at that stage. He had probably no other choice to go up the field. So I would say from Vinnie Corey's perspective, he can look back and say, no, I think he did make the right call in selecting Rory Began.
They're into the quarterfinal now, obviously, to face Tyrone on the 21st of April, Downplay Antrim, and Fermanagh play Armagh next weekend. But there was other games, Peter. I suppose in Connacht, Mayo had to go to New York. Sligo overpowered Leitrim. I don't think there's too many shocks in any of those results, was there?
Not in Connacht. Things went as you'd expect. And unfortunately, that's often what happens. And with the provincial championships, you find very strong teams playing against teams that shouldn't really be competing against them. New York tried as well as it could, but nobody expected them to get within 10 points of Mayo, and the exact same with London, against a Galway team that are in great shape. But once again, I think they've come out of that game with a few injuries. And likewise, Leitrim, like Westmeath, who played in a National League final the week before, it didn't do them any favours, and it was a disappointing display from their point of view, and Sligo ran out comfortable winners in the end.
I do want to get on to the shocks that Wicklow and Waterford caused, because that is brilliant to see, and that is heartening to see in the provincial championships. But just on Leitrim, Andy Moran coming out and accusing the GAA of undermining the Gaelic Football Championship and calling on the GPA to consider their position on the current fixture schedule, and even sticking the boot into his good friend Tom Parsons, which, you know, it's nice to see, I suppose, that he's able to do that as well. What did you make of Andy's comments, and would you agree with him?
Well, if he's an opinion, you know, he's played at the highest level and he's managing an inter-county team, he's entitled to give his opinion. And if that's what he's thinking, he's dead right to come out and air that. I would have sympathy with him. And I think the two boys on the Sunday game, Kieran and Eamon, expressed that view as well, that things as it stands, there's an imbalance regarding the fixture scheduling and the GAA, and it's probably about time that we had a reversal of the National League and the provincial championships, because the way it is at the minute with the new structure, we've got more games than ever before, but there's less time in which to play it. So who suffers? It's the players. There's been more demands placed on the players, more so than ever before, and that's the point that Andy was making yesterday. So it's not fair on inter-county managers, and it's certainly not fair on players. So we're going to have to look at it again. Either you change the order of the major competitions, or you revert back to a longer championship the way it was before, and then that's to the detriment of club players to a certain extent. So there's big decisions to be made moving forward on that front.
Just before I pose a final question on the couple of shocks, just to kind of re-emphasise our thoughts, of course, over Darren Hughes, who suffered a horrific injury with Monaghan. Hopefully he does make a speedy recovery. Just when we were chatting about Monaghan, Cavan, on Waterford's win over Tipperary and Westmeath's defeat at the hands of Wicklow, what was the bigger shock for you? And it is great to see this in the provincial championships, isn't it, Peter?
Absolutely. In terms of shocks, I wasn't overly surprised that Waterford got the better of Tip, because Tip, I think, only won one game themselves in Division 4. They were struggling. Mind you, I don't think Waterford won any games in the league. So they had a chance. There were two teams playing to a similar standard. The Wicklow one, without a doubt, they had struggled in the league. It was a difficult league. They got relegated, but I think there was hope, particularly in their last league game. They put up a great performance against Antrim, which very nearly kept them in the division. So, and I know Oisin McConville, you know, was saying that he felt they were unlucky, that he couldn't fault their effort. And you felt from listening to him that there was something in this team. So that belief was obvious yesterday, because many people had Westmeath winning this game with something to spare. But as I said earlier, the fact that they had a big game last week in Croke Park, they were coming off that on a high. They were going to training at the start of the week thinking about the game last week, rather the final, the one, rather than the threat that Wicklow was presenting to them. But going on the way the game panned out, you know, Wicklow were 8 points up at one stage. They played good football, but like Cavan, they were the more committed, they were the more hungry team, and thoroughly deserved their win.
Well, I'll be hoping Wicklow are thinking about their win all this week as they get ready to take on Kildare next weekend. Peter Canavan, thanks a million for taking our call. Niall Moran is on the line as well. Niall, we had the final at the weekend and Clare got their hands in some silverware when they beat Kilkenny. That surprise you, or did you think that's the way it would happen?
Not surprised. The way they performed in the league, I think they were consistent in how they performed again on Saturday evening. You'd have to look at them and just say, look, they're really composed in how they finished out the game. And again, in the third quarter, they really pushed ahead. Like, they found themselves maybe 3 points down, just coming in for half time, and all of a sudden, with a goal and a couple of points, they had overturned it. They were 2 points up, and I suppose, look, they really kicked on that third quarter again, and they found themselves 7 points up. And even when Kilkenny posed a lot of questions coming down the home stretch, they were still composed and still managed to get a free here and there, whereas I'm sure Derek Lean was probably disappointed with some of his charges in the nature of some of the frees they conceded. So Brian Nolan will be thrilled. Clare people will be thrilled. You know, I suppose they have the warning shots fired now for whoever comes, not just Limerick and Munster, so the warning shots are fired for everybody to see. And I suppose there's one Tony Kelly sitting in the wings getting ready to come back amongst others. So they'll be thrilled with the league. And if they never won on Saturday evening, they have used an enormous amount of players right the way throughout. A lot of guys who weren't even involved in the panel, in the match day panel on Saturday. And so with the intensity of the four league games coming to the Munster Championship, that will all bode well for them as well.
How much belief will this instill amongst the players?
I think the belief has always been there. Yeah. They never question themselves. Like, other people might look in from the outside and say, well, coming down the home stretch, they couldn't beat Limerick. I don't really think it was the case that they couldn't, that they didn't beat Limerick, yes. But I don't think it was the case of they couldn't beat Limerick. Like, remember that they hadn't beaten inside in the Gillagher Grounds last year. And, like, very, very small things. Maybe their shooting efficiency being one of the key things in last year's Munster final that let them down in both games, both Kilkenny, All-Ireland semi-final, maybe, and the Munster final. And looking at their efficiency in terms of the creation of goal chances on Saturday evening, they really took them. And you can contrast that then with Kilkenny. So without the presence of TJ Reid, like, there's probably a void there in terms of calmness and maybe seeing out the game. And even looking at Kilkenny in the first half, they hit 8 wides and did a couple of shots dropped short, which is very uncharacteristic for Kilkenny. And any of the teams who will be at the later end of the championship, they will be efficient in what they do, be it from frees and from play. And obviously, again, we're coming back to TJ Reid. He's not getting any younger, but his influence isn't getting any less. And maybe for Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody, they might go away home. Boys both still performed very, very well the other day. I suppose really the backing of leadership has to probably come on their hands on a consistent level over the coming weeks. And so bear in mind, even with their own clubs, they have the shadow of TJ sometimes looming over them. So look, I think Kilkenny, they had lots of positives. Mossy Keown was excellent when he came on. Keane Kenny, excellent in midfield, really positive for them. And look, there's just a couple of lessons to learn that in terms of seeing out the game and maybe just that element of leadership right the way throughout the park in the absence of TJ. I suppose maybe that's just the one thing that they'll have to get used to as the championship moves on.
As you watch the Clare fans streaming onto Semple Stadium, onto the pitch as the trophy was being presented, you kind of got the feeling that most of Clare has the fire in their belly for Limerick in a fortnight's time.
Yeah, the Bombonera, I think anyone who's familiar with Baca Juniors is what they call it, the stadium over there, and they call it the Matchbox. And it's probably one of the most intimidating soccer venues in the world. And I think Limerick are going to be going into the Matchbox on Sunday week. And it's going to be an incredible atmosphere. Like, if any of the previous games are to go by, it's an incredible atmosphere. But I probably would throw a word of caution to both teams. It is but one game of four, and inevitably, I think actually the round two could be a far more decisive round in terms of the fixtures that are coming, because bear in mind that Tipperary and Cork have also shown huge improvements, and both Limerick and Clare have to face those teams within 7 days. And there is a danger that if you invest too much emotion in this game, and it is but a game, it has carries the same weight as the other three games in the championship. And I think if both of those teams invest too much, like, there is a danger with the next match out that they could fall flat. And I suppose Waterford would be testament to that. What happened last year against Limerick, the championship fell flat from thereafter. So it is a huge game. It is a huge game, and obviously it'll give both teams huge confidence going forward. But just bear in mind, lads, that if there's injuries on either front, like we saw even with Kilkenny on Saturday, you lose one player, an influential player, it can have a major influence. And I know in Limerick throughout the league, probably there has been a number of guys who have been in and out through injury. And that will have an impact on that day if both teams don't go with a full hand.
Can't wait for that one in the Matchbox, Ruby.
It'll be exciting stuff. So, well, Niall Moran, thanks a million for taking our call. We've run out of time, Shane Dawson.
We have indeed. Just before we go, it's time to announce today's winner of our competition. Thanks to Aer Lingus, the official airline partner of the Irish rugby team. Of course, it's true that Twickenham is the official home of England rugby. Congratulations to Claire O'Brien from Tipperary, who's won the signed Irish jersey. And in Friday's draw for a trip to London to see Ireland take on England. More chances to win with Aer Lingus on the show this week. Which will begin tomorrow. You are on with Raf from 6 o'clock, Ruby, and then I will be joined by Mary Curtin and Paul Curry, John Kenny and Maeve de Burka on commentary for Ireland versus England. Are we going to win tomorrow, Ruby?
I'd settle for a nil-all draw now, Shane Dawson.
Yeah. We'll take a positive performance. Let's see how it all plays out tomorrow. Game On is with you from 6. Thanks to Ronan Lawler and Laurie Davis for working on this evening's show. From myself, Ruby, and all the Game On team, it is bye for now. Bette de Silva is up next, though, so stay tuned to 2FM.